Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm your host, Brian Scott, and I'm delighted to return to Howard Sherman today. And he has a really wonderful book called Your Key to Happiness. We've read some additional material from Harold Sherman talking about overcoming inferiorities and following your intuition. He was an ad writer, great writer, has several books, including The Way to Heaven, which is really good. This chapter really came alive for me as I read it in response to what is happening in the world and some previous teachings we had. In Reality Transurfing, early on in the podcast, I talked a lot about importance and the really good reality creators are very good at reducing the importance, bringing a little bit of humor into a situation and not taking life so seriously. And once you do that, you reduce the importance. It seems like life flows so much better and easier. So I want to discuss how you take your life too seriously through the lens of a chapter from one of Harold Sherman's books, Your Key to Happiness. Do you take your life too seriously? Do you let little things of no real consequence disturb you? Do you lie awake nights worrying about your conditions and picturing even worse things happening? And even when you're able to have a good time or take things more easily, are you constantly telling yourself that you can't afford it, that you shouldn't be doing what you are, and that you will probably suffer tomorrow for what you have dared enjoy today? I know many, many people who are like that. People who are unconsciously spoiling their lives and the lives of those around them because they are taking life too seriously. No one has ever yet aided a situation by worrying about it, nor has anyone ever improved their health by worrying over physical condition. But despite the fact that most people realize the harm and unhappiness they are bringing upon themselves by their worries and fears, very few of them make an earnest effort to take a new mental attitude toward life. We all need a sense of humor in these times to give us the proper balance, the ability to relax and make light of a situation which has magnified itself in our minds is a great aid toward overcoming it. Something usually happens the instant we really let go inwardly and say to ourselves, I've done all I humanly can. Now the condition will have to take care of itself. This mental attitude gives us the feeling of temporary detachment from the trouble and enables our inner mind to suggest a way out. When we have been worried, we have been too close to our problem to see how to solve it. But now the creative power within us, upon our relaxing body and mind, is freed to go to work. It produces ideas and attracts opportunities to us which we would never have recognized if our inner vision had been clouded by depressed and overburdened thoughts. Happiness cannot be grabbed or selfishly withheld from others. It comes to those who are attuned to the rhythmic ebb and flow of life. Strangely enough, we cannot keep anything by hanging on to it. We must pass it on. You cannot stop a river as it flows onward toward the sea. If you do, that river will overflow its banks and leave devastation in its wake. Everything in life is motion, is moving, is change, is progress. Everything is here for us to use and pass on. Your bloodstream is coursing normally through your veins and circulation is taking place. Shut off your circulation, let your bloodstream be checked, and you're apt to pay with your life. A miser clings to the money he has, fearful that he will get no more. His fears steal his happiness of living, eventually destroy his health, and actually keep money from flowing through him. You should regard money as a liquid stream, however thin this stream may appear to you at present, realizing that to dam up this stream and attempt to check its flow by hoarding will cause the stream to change its course and take other channels. Do not visualize the dollar you have in your hand today as your last dollar. It may actually be at the moment, but there are other moments and other dollars. The harder you cling to the one, the more deeply you are impressing upon yourself that it is the only one, without realizing it. You are directing this creative power to see to it that this is your last dollar. I know how difficult it is for you to have faith that other dollars will come, that the flow will continue if you spend that dollar, which seems to be your all for what you know you direly need. And I know that you can't make yourself do it, the while a certain something inside says, there goes my last dollar. What am I going to do now? I'm absolutely penniless. Forcing yourself to be relaxed isn't going to bring the condition you want. Whenever you have to force a thing, it is a sign, as I have said, that you are not sure of yourself, not sufficiently confident that this creative power within you can accomplish under your direction what you wish and on occasion sorely need. Every human has daily problems in life. Some are facing their problems resolutely. Others are having a struggle. Many would do almost anything to overcome a condition if they only knew just how to combat it. But they feel, perhaps, you have felt defenseless, as though the situation was too much for you, as though you could never regain what has been lost or hope to achieve what you once dreamed of achieving. When you feel this way, you should take heart from observing the marvelous manner in which the law of the subconscious mind is constantly working out in the lives of others. And the best place to obtain such evidence is through a perusal of the daily papers. Perhaps you may have read the news item from Liverpool, Nova Scotia, which told of Thomas Howell, a Chicago financier, breaking the world record from tuna landed with rod and line. The giant horse mackerel tipped the scales at 956 pounds, beating the record of 851 pounds then held by L. Mitchell Henry, English sportsman. Prior to catching this record-sized fish, Howell had pulled in a 792-pounder after it had hauled his small launch 200 miles in a 62-hour struggle. He thought at the time he had landed the biggest fish ever caught in North American waters. But when the news reporter told the Englishman's catch, Howell said he felt rather small. Undaunted, Howell said, "Well, the only thing to do is stay in Liverpool until I break the record." The following week, he brought in a large fish, which all in his party thought would be the record breaker. They watched workmen haul it onto the scales. It registered a mere 830 pounds, still 21 pounds under the Englishman's record. Disappointed, but with even greater resolution, Howell said, "Come on, we'll have to go right down and get another one." Such a statement revealed the possession by Thomas Howell of a marvelous mental attitude, a natural faculty for concentration, the ability to visualize what he desired to attain despite failure. The story went on to report Howell's turning his little launch back to Mercy Point and once more letting down his line. It was not long before the biggest fish nibbled and got hooked. The strain of the line kept its mouth open, and the fish drowned in 3 hours and 38 minutes. Landing this fish gave Thomas Howell the biggest thrill of his life, he said, since he could at last claim a world's record. This actual happening strikingly illustrates how definitely this creative power within may be employed to serve you in all of life's experiences. Thomas Howell, by vividly and confidently picturing himself landing the biggest tuna fish ever caught, gave his subconscious mind a mental blueprint to follow. It was directed to lead him to the spot where he might hook the biggest fish, and Mr. Howell finally achieved his ambition as a result of his perfect visualization. When you consider that many sportsmen have tried for years to catch a bigger fish and thus be proud holders of a record catch, Mr. Howell's demonstration becomes all the more remarkable as evidence that we can command this inner creative power to do our bidding. Mr. Howell did not take his failures too seriously. He played at getting the thing he very much desired. He played with an earnestness and an enthusiasm and a confidence that would not be denied. There was not the slightest trace of worry or fear that he wouldn't be able to catch the biggest fish. In his own words, after two failures, he said, "We'll have to go right down and get another one." If you could maintain such optimism in the face of disappointment and discouragement, you would not long remain in your present state. If you could see beyond your troubles and hardships and setbacks, see yourself overcoming them, see yourself relaxing and knowing that good things must come in answer to your vivid, confident visualizing of them, your whole life would soon be changed and a new happiness and health would be yours. As Mr. Howell himself would probably say, there's lots of big fish in the ocean still to be caught. To which I would add, decide upon the kind of big fish you want and go after it in the same enthusiastic visualizing manner that Mr. Howell did, and you'll soon have this fish on your line, landing the thing in life you most desire. A. The fear of growing old. Are you afraid of growing old? No doubt quite a number who will read this have already reached the age which the world considers old. Many have had to make the usual mental adjustment, resigning themselves to the knowledge that they cannot physically do what they once did. Others may be rebelling against this natural aging of their body and fearing the coming of each tomorrow, since it means to them a furthering of the dreaded process of growing old. I've had young people tell me that they only wanted to live 15 or 20 years longer, since they didn't want to grow old and be a burden to anyone, and there didn't seem to be much fun in living beyond 50 or 60. Young people who feel this way have a wrong idea about life and its fundamental purpose. They're not basically interested in real development of character and ability. They're living but for the moment, selfishly desiring to take everything they can out of life without putting any more into life than is absolutely necessary. Young people with such an attitude are burned out, physically and mentally, at middle age and have experienced, as they think, all life's thrills. They have lived a shallow, superficial existence, and when this sort of life has passed them by, when the artificial world they have created bursts like a bubble, they can see nothing in life worth living for. Many such young people do not even wait for middle age. They are bored with living in their early 20s or 30s and desirous of ending it all. This is one of the tragedies of our modern civilization. The speed at which we are living, most of our youths are having experiences shot at them so fast they cannot begin to absorb these experiences. As a consequence, they make many costly mistakes. They get involved in personal difficulties. They become disillusioned. They try to adopt a don't care attitude. They decide it's no use trying to preserve any ideals, that one had better eat, drink, and be merry if one hopes to capture any of the temporary joys of this life. And the result is a pathetic and ever-increasing number of misfits, of young people who have grown old prematurely, who have aged before their time, who have missed the real meaning of life itself and see nothing ahead but a mocking repetition of what has gone before. To me, the plight of these young people is much more sad than that of a middle-aged person who suddenly awakens to the realization that he or she is getting along in years and apparently can't do anything about it. It is sadder because the average middle-aged person's past life has been rich in experience. Just how rich, many individuals may not themselves have appreciated. Their lives to them may have seemed quite routine and humdrum, and yet an outsider might view with envy the experiences of which these lives have been comprised. And any middle-aged person can, when he or she has attained true knowledge of self, draw upon this ripened past experience to build a happy future. But young people who have lived thoughtlessly and without purpose approach later years much like a nutshell which contains only a dried-up kernel in place of the matured fruit which should have been there. You get out of life exactly what you have put into it, and you realize this more and more as you reach greater and greater maturity. My grandfather, Mary A. Morrow, was a remarkable woman physically, mentally, and spiritually. She lived to be 83 and was active all her years until but a few days before her passing. She said to me upon one occasion, "You know, it's so hard to grow old gracefully." And yet Grandmother Morrow was setting a marvelous example of doing that very thing. She had a deep and abiding faith in God, in the universe, in the fundamental rightness of things. She bore such afflictions as came to her with a rare patience and fortitude, which was expressed in a clipping that she had treasured and which I came across after she had gone. It said, life is a battle. We all have a work to do. We must not expect to sail to heaven on flowery beds of ease, while others fought to win the prize and sailed through bloody seas. Grandmother Morrow believed that happiness must be earned, both here and hereafter. Yet when her time came to go, with loved ones gathered about her bedside clinging to her, she was able to face this supreme moment and to say, "You who love me, do not hold me here. I want to go. There are many dear ones over there. It will be a happy release." None of us needs fear this natural process of growing old, who can see this life as a training school for greater things beyond. We should not think of the end as the end, but only as a new beginning. And though each of us must face this last experience alone, it is comforting to know that dear ones have faced it before us, that untold millions have met the great adventure, and that science is joining hands with the religions of the world in saying, one of these days, your faith that there is life after death may be proved in our laboratories. We know beyond a doubt that a constant evolution of physical forms is taking place, and it is equally possible there is also an evolution of the soul. To fear growing old is to invite misery and unhappiness. The infirmities of old age, which have come to some, are very trying. I know. An elderly friend of mine recently said to me, "I hope that I'm taken before I lose possession of any of my faculties." It is the desire of elderly people not to be a physical burden to younger members of their family. As long as they can be up and around and helping in their way, they are happy. But there is a natural dread of being bedridden or unable to do even the little things that would bring such joy. Fear of such an eventuality certainly will not help and may even attract it. If you are one who is now afflicted, you have the opportunity of testing your own character, which you should have developed through the years. You have the opportunity of proving that your inner consciousness, the real you, your soul, is the ruling power in life, that it is strong even though your body may be weak. You have the opportunity of demonstrating a courage, a patience, and a cheerfulness which should be an example to your children, your loved ones, and which should make their care of you a pleasant duty. You should not feel badly or look upon yourself as a burden. Every experience that has come to us in life has a reason behind it, if we can but discover it. If you are old and afflicted, the care you are at to others may be doing something fine to them. It may be bringing out an element of self-sacrifice, devotion, and certain stronger qualities in them which might not otherwise have developed. It is not that you had to be physically handicapped in order that others might be helped by their right attitude toward your condition. But since your life has worked out in this manner, your dear ones have the opportunity of meeting the situation in the way that they should. Even as you have the opportunity to bear your affliction with fortitude and the faith that this creative power within will not desert you, this God force, if you so choose to interpret it, will remain with you through whatever changes are to come. Personally, although I am still comparatively young, I can anticipate my years beyond 60 when they arrive as an opportunity to survey more leisurely the passing scene, as a chance to judge the ways of men in the light of my more mature experience and judgment, as a chance to go even deeper into the mystery of my own being and its relation to the universe, as a chance to read and reread the finest thoughts of men, thus enriching my own life, that much more as a chance to serve my fellow humans, which the rush of earlier years has perhaps prevented, as a chance to recapture my younger days in devotion to possible grandchildren. Old age offers so many fine opportunities that the pressure of more youthful and less worthwhile activities denies to us. Of course, our mental attitude must be right. We must look for these opportunities and make whatever physical and mental adjustment is required when the time comes. But no matter what our position, we should be able to keep mind and heart busy. A man of 60 related to me that a woman of 80 had congratulated him on his 60th birthday, explaining her congratulations by saying, "You've begun to live after 60 years of preparation and are now wise enough to govern yourself and help others. For this reason, you are destined to discover, as I have, that the best part of life is between 60 and 80. Life is what you make it. And this is true at any age. Do not fear growing old. Look for the joys and deeper satisfactions which can be yours as life ripens with each year of experience. Mentally picture yourself as approaching not the end, but a new beginning. Such an attitude will change your entire outlook toward the future. Life must be lived, and at times endured, but it offers us fundamentally and eternally the promise of higher and finer things. B. The fear of death. I've had many persons ask me how to banish thoughts of a great personal grief, which seems, as they say, to be a fixed idea with them. Personal grief brought about by the death of a loved one calls for one of the most difficult physical and mental adjustments required of humans. The only way to remove this fixed idea of loss is to realize that this change, which we term death, comes to us all in its own due time. It must be only a few years at the most before you and all of us have joined our loved ones. This loss may have necessitated certain vital changes in your mode of living and your relation to others. But the greatest tribute you can pay to the one who has gone on is the courage and faith with which you meet the situation. You should visualize the loved one as still alive. Many families have separated the children crossing the ocean and growing up, never seeing each other again. In some instances, they keep in touch through correspondence, but in others, all communication is lost. And yet there is no sense of real personal loss, because there is a knowledge that their loved ones still live and have their being in another part of this world. It will help you to feel that life is continuous, even though you may have lost the physical evidence of its existence. And your sense of loss will be softened if you picture your dear one as though he or she is only separated by an ocean, in this case, the ocean of time. You will look forward then to the occasion of rejoining your loved one after your own life experience here is ended. And your thoughts, instead of looking backward upon unhappy moments in your past, will look forward to a time of even greater happiness. Sometimes associated with a personal grief or the impression that the death of a friend or a relative has left upon one's mind is the strong personal fear of death itself. Here is a typical example of such a fear expressed in a letter to me. I am 28 years of age and I have a terrible fear of death. It seems it is always on my mind. I simply cannot enjoy life or find interest in anything because of this fear. I've had this feeling of fear for 8 years. It seems to have me in its grip and I cannot forget it. I am married and have a nice home and a wonderful husband, and I am an expectant mother. My husband can't understand why I don't like to stay at home the way he does, but I can't tell him how I feel. Can you tell me how to overcome this terrible fear? My answer to this woman was as follows. I can thoroughly sympathize with and understand your feeling. There are few sensations so absolutely demoralizing, so inwardly agonizing, so physically depressing as the constant fear of death. This fear, as you say, remains in the background of your consciousness. No matter what you're doing, it is with you in your working hours, and at night it's like a stab in the dark whenever you are aroused from sleep. This fear of death may have developed from a number of causes. You may have suffered the loss of a loved one, which has left its deep impression upon you, and your thought of them had led to your picturing the possibility of your own death. But in your particular case, I'm of the belief that your fear has been the result of your being afraid that the happiness now yours is too good to last. Many women experience an emotional change after marriage, and you've been so comparatively happy that you wanted to protect yourself against anything that might cut short this happiness. Because death is the most drastic change that could occur, you've somehow felt that this is the only enemy with the power to destroy the happiness which is now yours. The fact that you are an expectant mother has also tended to intensify this fear which exists in the background of your mind. No matter what you may be doing, it prevents you from relaxing and causes you to want to keep constantly on the go. But this fear of death is nothing you can run away from. It must be met face to face and put out of your life once and for all. These months just ahead of you should be happy and filled with joyous anticipation of the new life to come. Death is not a destroyer unless we make it a destroyer. If you are in normal health at present, and if you are free your inner mind of the fear that you've constantly been picturing, death can have no hold upon you. You are still young, with the promise of a lifetime of good things ahead of you. You should realize that you are part of a great creative power, which is now assisting in the creation of a new life, a creating power that knows no death, a creative power that is ready and willing to respond to whatever mental command you give it. This creative power exists beyond all physical things in the universe. You should learn to rely upon it and realize that you yourself cannot die. Your thoughts have been centered upon your physical being, which is only the external expression of your real self. Just think, this little new life that you are treasuring within your body apparently did not exist some months ago. And yet, miracle of miracles, it did exist as a potential human identity in the great creative scheme of things. If this were not so, life itself could not manifest. From this illustration, I want you to understand that before you were born, you apparently were not, and yet you now are. The ancient philosophers, wise in their study of life, have said that end and beginning are dreams. From this day on, banish all fear of death. It is but an incident in the great adventure of life, and life was meant to be enjoyed to the fullest. If you are alive and happy today, that is enough. Tomorrow never comes until it is today. There's no reason why each succeeding day should not be as happy or happier than your yesterdays, if you mentally picture a continuation of this happiness in your future. So that is the short chapter by Howard Sherman on taking life too seriously. And so just take the lessons that he's giving you, and let's just sit back and talk about this. There's a lot of people that are working hard on goals, that have things come up that really affect them. The reason I know this is that that is part of me too. It was my mother. My mother was the biggest worrier and never could relax or enjoy life or enjoy the moment. She always took everything too seriously, was always worried. And I know there's a lot of you out there that are just the same, constantly in a state of fear and worry. You don't see the bright side of life. You don't see the joy that is available to you right now in this moment, no matter what you're going through. And the reason this is important is it controls your future. We are talking about reality creation. And one of the main blocks to creating the reality that you want is losing access to this creative spirit. Because when you're in this creative, joyful spirit, where you don't take life too seriously, that is when you're open to your imagination. Imagination is God, and that is where you have this connection to this higher power that Howard Sherman talks about. But the problem is sometimes we aim for things, we move towards things, and we create a level of importance. Importance is always going to result in an imbalance, and you end up getting the opposite of what it is you're looking for. When you place things on a pedestal, when you push things too hard, you're always going to get feedback. The universe always works within the law of balance. You can just simply watch water. You can watch any energy. In a lab, everything is moving towards balance. It is the fundamental principle of life. But you must step back a couple steps and look at this metaphysically. And that everything is moving towards balance in reality creation. So if you put something up on a pedestal and make it super important, you're also bringing the opposite of that, because you're considering that the opposite is possible. And when you consider it, you create it. So in order to get what you want, you have to have the playful attitude that you rest in on a regular basis, where you don't take life too seriously. You don't worry, you don't fear, and it's hard. It's hard when you have that last dollar and you have to have this playful, joyous, fearless vibe where you know the next dollar's coming, you can spend this dollar, you can get into the flow. It's hard. It's easy to look at what we have as what we have now for the rest of our lives, but it's not true. Abundance is not receiving one thing, it is a flow of receiving. And you receive that flow when you don't push it away. You're in the river and you just follow the stream, and it will take you to all the abundance that you need. But as soon as you take it too seriously, you either slow yourself down or you end up on a different river, pushing towards the waterfall that you did not want to go down. Every thought is creative and a cause of something else. You attract thought streams. And these thought streams can be enhanced and displaced by creating a level of importance and treating life too seriously. you can have whatever you want. And if you don't catch the fish that you wanted to catch, just go back and fish again. Don't take things so seriously. If you wanted to meet that perfect person and it didn't work out, that means somebody else out there is better. If you wanted to have that perfect job and it didn't work out, that means something else is better. If you don't take it so seriously, you will find a great joy and greater success than you could ever imagine. Stop taking life too seriously. And two really important places where this happens is in the fear of death. We underlie what we're doing in our actions and behavior by this underlying fear of death. There is no need to fear death. Check out my episode from Lau Russell that you cannot die. And then we fear growing old. And there is no need to fear growing old. You're in the prime of your life and you can live forever. And I do believe that we will live long enough to where we can live forever, that new technologies and innovations are changing the world. There is nothing for you to fear because you control the reality that you're in. Let go of anger and hate and all those things that distort you. Let go of the things that make you take life too seriously and treat it like it's a joyful ride, a wonderful adventure. And you can have so much fun because anything is possible for you. I'd love to get your opinion of this particular piece. And are you taking life too seriously? I want to know the answer, because if you are, then let's reduce the importance. Let's laugh at ourselves a little bit. Let's enjoy the joy. In any case, all episodes of The Reality Revolution can be found at therealityrevolution.com. And welcome to The Reality Revolution.